AJ Suero, welcome to V the People.
So excited to be here.
I'm happy you're here.
This is amazing. It's like I'm always interviewing people. I'm never interviewed, so I am so looking forward to this.
Yeah, and I have questions about your podcast too. But first and foremost, are you still chair of the Hispanic Chamber of the Lehigh Valley?
I'm no longer chair.
No.
It's okay. You know, time passes and it's time to hand off the torch. I'm actually excited about the time that I was able to serve as chair.
Yeah.
So I did 3 years.
Nice.
Amazing time. I had amazing opportunities to do a lot of great things, like go to the White House and go to like the governor's mansion in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, representing our chamber, representing the Valley. So it was a great experience. But it was time to move on to something new. So excited for what we were able to do. More excited about the people that we were able to bring on and continue the work.
What years were you the chair?
So I came on with the chamber back in 21 as a regular board member.
Nice.
And then in 22, I was elected for my first year as chair. Normally, you get to serve 2 terms.
Okay.
So I served 2 years. We got to the end of year 2 and we were kind of freaking out because, hey, there's nobody waiting in the wings. So they did a special election and I served a 3rd year.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so 3 years total.
Love that. I was doing a little digging and research on you.
Uh-oh. Should I be concerned?
No, there's nothing, just so you know. And I'm like a very skilled Googler.
Okay.
There's no dirt on you.
That's good.
You're in the clear. But I had read that you said at some point when you first moved to the Lehigh Valley, you felt like a fish out of water.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
So where did you move here from and why did you feel that way?
So my wife and I are lifelong New Yorkers, or were lifelong New Yorkers until we moved here. The running joke in our house is always, it's a nod to LL Cool J because, you know, I was born out in Brooklyn. She represents Queens.
Nice.
So, we always lead off with that one. But my parents had moved to Redding in Berks County back in 99.
Okay.
I got reacquainted with my wife because she was a childhood friend.
Oh.
Right around 2002, our sisters played matchmaker and we started going out.
Love.
So when we got married, she was living in Queens. I was living in Redding. We were like, we don't want to live in either of these places. So we landed on Allentown and not knowing anyone here, not knowing anything about it. But been here ever since, raised our kids here. And it was like being a fish out of water because what we found, and I think that this is the experience that many people had like in the early aughts living in Allentown, especially if you were a transplant.
Mm-hmm.
We would work Monday through Friday at our jobs, looking forward to Friday afternoon because we would just go off to New York City for the weekend because we had no kids.
Yeah.
And so spend the weekend in New York and then Sunday night come back to Allentown, do it all over again.
Yeah.
What I think has been beautiful about the past 20 years is that the Lehigh Valley has changed so much. There's so much more to do here. There's so much more entertainment and restaurants and lifestyle that now I find myself going to New York maybe twice a year, three times a year.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is usually just visit our in-laws who still live in Queens. But the Lehigh Valley has just become this place where people want to live, play, work, you know, and just do everything here. So it's been great.
Yeah, I love that. And I always feel like when I go to New York, as much as I love it, it's so stimulating that when I'm like, when I see the Pennsylvania sign and I get back, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah.
And I'm here.
Well, you know, New York has just changed so much. And I don't know. I think the people who've lived in New York can relate to this. But when you live in New York, it's like you're so used to the system with everything being fast and the trains and everything moving at such a high speed that as soon as you get out of that, even for like a month or two, you try to go back to it and you just can't readjust.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your nervous system has like recalibrated.
Yeah. It's like I go to New York now for like a Broadway show and I'm like looking around like what's going on? Like what? I get sensory overload now because I'm just not used to it anymore.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Talk about your podcast. Wait, hold on. It's called
Somos Lehigh Valley.
Yes. Okay. So what does it mean? How did you start it? Tell me everything.
Yeah. So during the time that I was chair of the chamber, we went through this whole overhaul with our marketing. We were thinking, like, how do we want to market the Hispanic chamber? And I think we kind of went back to just wanting to have a sense of family, mm-hmm. because, you know, in the Hispanic culture, family is everything. Mm-hmm. Like, everything flows out of family. So we came up with a slogan, Somos Familia, mm-hmm. like, we are family. And then we just started kind of developing other programs and things with that slogan in mind, with that Somos in mind. We have a women's lunch that happens every other month called Somos Latinas. All it is women get together, have lunch together, everybody networks and kind of introduces themselves at the end. Right along the same time, we were like, okay, well, let's extend this and see if we could turn this into, you know, media that we can share out with people. Having had, you know, 20 years of media experience, I was like, yeah, we could do a podcast. That's easy.
Yeah.
So what do we call it? Well, we should probably call it something that has to do with this whole Somos thing. Mm-hmm. So what are we? Okay, we're the Lehigh Valley. So mm-hmm. Somos Lehigh Valley. That's where it came from.
And I love it.
Yeah. So we've enjoyed doing it. Have had a chance to interview entrepreneurs and, you know, leaders in business and government and all these different areas. And learning their story, like, how did they come to the Lehigh Valley? What it is that's important to them about this community? Just sharing insights, sometimes even sharing tools with people about, you know, how you can better your economic situation or learn more about civics and involvement and things like that. So, again, all geared around creating the sense of belonging for people.
Yeah.
And making people really feel like they're vested in this community.
Yeah. Do you also get, like, local hotspots or review any like food places?
Oh yeah, well, see, that's the thing. Hey, Spanish culture is a lot, or a lot of it revolves around food.
Yeah,
you know, people don't have necessarily a favorite hotel. They might not have a favorite spot to go to hang out, but everybody has a favorite restaurant.
Nice.
And everybody's passionate about a certain type of food.
Yep.
You know, that's one of the things that I think was kind of challenging when I first got here, is I remember there was one, like, it's good Italian food place, there was one good Mexican food place, and maybe one good Dominican place, but now it's like you got Salvadorian and Ecuadorian, yes, and Honduran, and you got all this stuff. So I think people are learning that Spanish food is not just tacos, it's not just rice and beans, there's all of these other things. Mm. And so that's the first question I ask when people come on the show, is like, What's the restaurant that I have not heard about that I should go check out?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, we've gotten, you know, restaurant owners that have, you know, chimed in and written back to us and said, like, hey, you know, I got like 20 new people coming in my door because you mentioned me on the podcast. So yeah, thank you so much. So
nice. Yeah,
it's been great giving back that way too.
Did you get to go to Willie Joe's on Lehigh Street before they closed?
Willie Joe's. No, no.
You know, people here are so passionate about their Yakko's hot dogs.
Yeah.
But their rival for years was Willie Joe's. There's still one location, but it's takeout only.
So I feel like I've missed something.
I mean, the Lehigh Street location was just the best because it was like all wood paneling and wood booths. Like, you were just in a cabin, kind of.
So where on Lehigh were they?
It was right next to Haldeman Ford. And Kathleen, okay, and I joked we were going to have a rehearsal dinner there before COVID happened. Yeah. Because you could get a chili cheese dog, a beer, and pierogies for like $5.
Oh my gosh, that sounds, yeah, amazing.
On like an old school cafeteria lunch tray. And it was, so the thing about Yakko's hot dogs is they're very like shrivelly and kind of like overcooked. And
I've never had a Yakko's.
What?
No, I'm just, you know, I don't know. It's, pardon me for saying this, but The mascot. I don't, oh, know. It just turns me off.
What is it? Is it just a hot dog?
I don't know. I mean, maybe, you know, the mascot doesn't have this very welcoming face. You know, he's like very angry.
Did you,
like,
meet the mascot in person?
No, it's just like when I look at the mascot, it just doesn't, I'm not, you know, it doesn't give me that like, hey, I really want to eat this kind of vibe.
Isn't it just a hot dog?
I think it is. I'm, yeah, it's a hot dog, but he's got like this, I don't know, he doesn't have this welcoming face, you know. There's something about, like, when your food is the mascot that just, I don't know, doesn't appeal to me that
mascot
way.
Mascot.
Yeah. Okay. He's got this angry face.
Understood. Yeah, you know what? He does look kind of mad. I do understand what you're saying. And he's also a hot dog eating a hot dog.
Yeah, so isn't that like cannibalism?
It's cannibalism.
Yes, that's what I figured.
Listen, they've never been my favorite. Willie Joe's, I don't even think they had a mascot. And their hot dogs were just so much better.
Well, I've always been a Nathan's guy. Like, growing up in Brooklyn and, you know, going to Coney Island summers, it's like, you can't beat a Nathan's hot dog.
And a New York City dirty water dog on the street.
Oh, yeah.
That's where it's at.
Those are the best. That and the bagels.
Oh, yeah. Because amazing. Of the water, right?
100%.
Which is crazy.
You know what's funny is that one time I went down to Orlando. We were on a vacation and we pull up to this spot and it says Brooklyn style pizza.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay.
How?
That was my question. I'm like, okay, let's go try this guy out. So I walk in the place, I talk to the owner, I'm like, hey, Brooklyn style pizza? He's like, yeah, Brooklyn style pizza. I'm like, I am from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be very critical of your pizza. He's like, I want that. He's like, I want you to try my pizza and tell me the truth. Tell me if it tastes like Brooklyn pizza. So we sit down. We order a pizza. I take two or three bites. He comes back and he's like, so how was it? I said, it was horrible. My wife looks at me like, how could you say that? I'm like, he wanted the honest truth, right? So I said, it tasted like cardboard. It was horrible. You know, and I told him, you need to get that New York water.
Yeah.
So
that's the secret.
Yeah.
To the dough.
100%.
The dirty water.
Yep.
Okay. Well, this is kind of fitting because you're wearing this community hat. And in my research, you're talking a lot about connection and community. It seems to be kind of like your life slogan in a way. So first of all, where'd you get that hat? And then second of all, what does community actually look like in practice to you? What does it mean?
So first question with the hat.
Yeah.
It's actually a brand I'm working on.
Oh.
Yeah. So, you know, ever since, I want to say 24, 25, and, you know, the fallout of how things went with the election, mm-hmm. I think that the rift, the divide between left and right has just become a lot more defined. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like you walk places and it's like people will not talk to you until they figure out what side you're on, right? Mm-hmm. And my thought has always been like, you know what, if you're trying to heal the divide, community is a path forward.
True.
So that's kind of like my slogan that I'm working. And like, I'll share that. Like when I do a post, like I'll hashtag that. It's like community is the path forward.
Yeah.
So I'm working on a line. You know, the hat was the first thing.
It's cool.
But I'm hopefully working on sweatshirts and t-shirts and things like that in the near future. But yeah, I mean, it really is what I'm all about because that's kind of what really made me feel like the Lehigh Valley was a place where I wanted to live. Working here, you know, coming here from New York, it's like at first I worked in call centers and things like that. That's a very isolated life, you know, because you go in, you do your 8 hours, you leave, you don't really interact with people. Mm-hmm. But as I progressed in my career, I got into roles where I was directly in contact with the community.
Yeah.
So for me, that started in 2008 when I saw, it was 18 or 17 when Hurricane Maria happened. Mm-hmm. I saw just how the whole community came together and rallied around those who were affected. Mm-hmm. What many people don't realize is that there was a huge influx of Puerto Ricans that came from the island into the Lehigh Valley at that time. I mean, I think it was something around 25,000 Puerto Ricans that actually came to the Lehigh Valley as a direct result of Hurricane Maria.
Wow.
I met a lot of great friends who left the island because of the hurricane. And something in me was like, I was just like, I wish I could do something to help people down there. You know, so about a year later, I had the opportunity to come on staff with the American Red Cross.
I saw that.
Yeah. And so what was great about that is that I got to know a lot about Pennsylvania, serve the whole Commonwealth, see where the people are, see how they live, help them in times of need. But then in 2020, I had the opportunity to deploy to Puerto Rico for an earthquake. So
I actually went.
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing is, it was kind of one of those, it was kind of like the full circle moment where it's like that hurricane made me want to get involved with community. Mm-hmm. And here I was being tasked with going down to help people who had just suffered through an earthquake.
Yeah.
So that experience was really a good learning experience for me, because I had a certain perception of the Puerto Rican community,
okay,
having grown in New York, you know, having lived around Puerto Ricans all my life. But being down on the island after a disaster, seeing the houses still tarped after Hurricane Maria, like 3 years later, seeing how people still, with everything that was going on, were so resourceful, were so happy, were so full of life, were so willing to help each other. You know, it really made me understand a lot of the people who I was meeting, you know, like why they were the way they were. Like you see people and sometimes they're going through adversity, but they're still able to kind of have a positive outlook. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw that and, you know, just experiencing that, I mean, I kind of leaned into that. And I think that even now, like the way I live my life, it's impacted by that. See, I've seen people on their worst days.
Yeah.
There's one story from, I'm keeping the table.
It's okay. You're fine.
So there's one story from Puerto Rico that will always live with me. There was a house that we were visiting houses, doing health checks on people, making sure everybody was okay after these earthquakes. And we go up to this house. There's this family. There were about 20 people in the house, 5 dogs, 3 cats. They had a sign out front that said, "This is what's in the house. You know, in case you're coming with aid, make sure you bring enough food for all these people."
Oh, wow.
So we go there and, you know, we provide supplies. We provide all these good things. And the lady who lived there, the lady of the house, she says, "You know, thank you so much for coming. I appreciate everything that you guys have done. Where are you guys coming from?" And I explained, you know, well, you know, the Red Cross is a volunteer organization. We come from different parts of the country. So she asked me, well, where do you come from? And I said, well, I come from Pennsylvania. Well, she's like, well, what part of Pennsylvania? And I said, well, it's the eastern part. She's like, well, because I have a nephew who's on the radio over there. I was like, who's your nephew? And she mentions a name. And I said, oh, my God, I know him.
No way.
Yeah. And so he had trouble getting a hold of her, okay, after the whole earthquake situation. So I pulled out my phone and I FaceTime him. And I'm like, hey, your family's here. They're all okay. They're doing great.
No way.
I mean, and again, it's just one of those moments that I kind of sense like connection, the importance of community, the importance of, you know, being there for other people in their times of need. Mm-hmm. And just not knowing like who you can impact, you know, through the work that you do. So that's one of the things I look back at and I'm like, man, my time with the Red Cross was really rewarding for things like that. Yeah. So many of those things happened.
You got to handle it directly. Your boots on the ground, first response, basically, in a lot of ways, seeing it firsthand.
Yeah. I still have a picture at my desk of, it was me at a shelter with, she was a 6-7 year old girl at the time. And I saw that she had nobody to play with. She was by herself. I go over to her and I saw that she had a tea set laid out on the stretcher that her and her mom were sleeping on. So I grab one of the teacups and I start playing tea with her.
Yeah.
And one of the photographers saw it and they were like, oh, I gotta capture this. I gotta capture this. So I have that photo and I keep it at my desk kind of as a reminder, mm-hmm, of the fact that, you know, sometimes people want to be someone to the world, but sometimes what you're really meant to do is be the world to that one person.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Was Maria referenced in the Bad Bunny halftime performance?
Repeatedly.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Is Maria what was represented in the power line workers?
Yes. So what was interesting about the whole aftermath of the Bad Bunny appearance is, like, yeah, a lot of people going on YouTube and are reacting to it and not really understanding, mm-hmm, what all was going on. But, yeah, so that section of the show where he's climbing on the power lines, mm-hmm, the song is El Apagón. It's called The Blackout. Mm-hmm. What he's really talking about is not just Maria. It's the continual state of decline of the power situation on the island, because I think Maria just exposed it.
Okay.
Because Maria was such a direct hit, it was a Category 4 that hit the island directly, it knocked out the system for more than a year. So you had people who for like 9-10 months did not have power. And so the power company couldn't get out to some of those places. You actually had locals who got on top of the power poles and tried to fix the lines. And that's why you had the workers, right, climbing on the poles trying to fix the line.
Which is so dangerous.
Very dangerous.
I don't think people understand how dangerous it really is.
But then again, it also speaks to the resourcefulness of people down in Puerto Rico. It's like they're not going to wait around for help to show up. They're going to try to fix it if they can. They're going to try to help their neighbor if they can. And so there were so many messages in that, what was it, like a 14-minute show?
Yes.
And the thing is, like, I'm sitting there and I'm like, wow. It's like, I wish that people could really understand it all, what all is going
all
on.
All the context.
So what questions do you have about the show?
Well, honestly, I have to say, like, I'm probably pretty ignorant. Like, I've always loved Bad Bunny. I love his music. I love what he represents. I've kind of seen him more through the lens of like sexuality and gender, and that he's talked about being like pretty fluid, and he's obviously a big advocate and ally to the gay community because of that. So I think my lens is probably very different. I was definitely very aware of the blackout in Puerto Rico. I never really understood outside of like government funding why logistically that happened. And I don't speak Spanish. I wish I did. But so there was probably a lot that I missed. So you could break it down for me like I'm in kindergarten, because I would love to know.
So I think that the best way to talk about the show is in terms of themes. I think that there were several themes that were dominant or predominant in the show. The first of those, for me, you know, working with the Chamber of Commerce, was entrepreneurship. Like, that was all over that, because, I mean, he walks out, right, and his interactions in the field are with, like, a guy selling tacos and another person who's selling slushies and, you know, people in the corner who are selling jewelry. Like, those are all things that happen in the Puerto Rican communities. Like, everybody's got a hustle. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got a side hustle. Everybody's trying to make money. You had, like, the women off on the side with the bricks. I mean, that's a thing. It's like you had women, you know, on the island after Maria who were repairing houses and things like that. So that's one thing, right? Then you also have the whole theme of celebrating in the midst of turmoil, right? So the wedding scene, you know, kind of, you know, really exhibited that, where it's like you have this wedding going on right in the middle of the Super Bowl halftime show, and he says something towards the end of the song that nobody picked up on, but he says, "Dance without fear and live without fear."
Chills.
So the thing is, everybody was waiting for the moment that he was going to outright say who it was that he was against. But he took the position of, I don't have to say who I'm against. I could just amplify who I'm for.
Joy itself is a form of resistance.
Right. So here's people in the midst of, you know, this whole situation, getting married, having a good time, and then you flip it, and all of a sudden it's like you're no longer at this wedding. Now you're in Spanish Harlem, and there's like, and the thing is, I would love for people to go back. I'm a very detail oriented person when it comes to like layouts of stages and things like that. There were entrepreneurs in those shops. There was a little kid getting a haircut.
Yep.
He was actually getting a haircut during the show. You had, you know, another girl doing, you know, the nails on the side. You had another Toñita, you know, who has the shop in Brooklyn. You know, he got his shot of rum and all that stuff. I mean, that, you know, what he did is he connected. He said, like, being Puerto Rican is not just about the island experience. It's not just about the New York experience. It's about the fact that we have both. And so what the undertone there was, like, you know what? We are legally on the island. we are legally in the States. We have the right to have both.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, he closes it out after, you know, obviously the blackout. The biggest statement is the fact that we are all the Americas.
Yes.
You know, it's not just the U.S. It's like he names all the countries. He brings out all the flags. He's like, all of us are America. So, you know, obviously it wasn't said, it was implied, but it's like, all of us are America, so none of us can be illegal,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I think it was masterfully done. I think that, you know, what you got leaving out of there, out of that, you know, arena, if you were there or after watching that, is he was projecting positivity. He wasn't attacking anybody. So how could you hate that?
How could, and honestly, why do you think so many people were against it?
Well, I think that obviously because of the fact that our country is so polarized, mm-hmm. many people think that you have to completely reject people who don't look like you, people who don't sound like you. I know that the language thing was a huge thing. But, you know, if you... I think that when you look at language, if you step out of the U.S., you know, go to Europe, go to Asia, people in those nations, they know 4-5 languages.
Yep.
So the thing is there an official language in Europe? Not really. I mean, everybody's got 2 or 3 languages that they know. They're probably working on another one. Because, again, they understand that Europe is not one country. It is that whole territory. Mm-hmm. So... I think because of the fact that we've for a long time had this idea that America is only these 50 states, people feel like, you know, well, you have to come here and you have to speak just this one language. But it's counterintuitive to the whole immigrant movement, mm-hmm. you know, because everybody came here from another country speaking another language. And what do? They found other people who spoke the same language, had the same culture, ate the same food, and they formed communities. Mm-hmm. That's how communities formed in the U.S. So I think that that's part of the beauty of our country is 100%. That, you know, you can go onto Manhattan, start at the very tippy top,
yep.
and it's like living in the Dominican Republic. You come down a few blocks to 115th Street, it's Puerto Rico. You come down to 90th Street and you have, you know, and you keep going down. You have Italians, you have French. I mean, just the fact that you have all of access to all of those different cultures, mm-hmm. I mean, I think is so amazing. So,
yeah.
You know, I would love to see people dive more into the fact that there's beauty in our diversity and not have it be like a hindrance or, you know, like a stumbling block.
Right. And then I know in the beginning you were talking about community as being the way forward. What do you do if you come across someone who is so opposite-minded and doesn't see it that way? I mean, how, for me personally, it's really hard for me to bite my tongue or to be kind. And I know, obviously, that that's what we're supposed to do. But what do you do in those moments?
I've come across that a lot, you know, mm-hmm. where, you know, people will say like, hey, you know, this culture or that culture, it's like, why can't they be more like us? Or why can't they do things more like us? A lot of it has to do with pointing people back to, why don't you learn more about them?
Mm.
Why don't you actually take the time? I mean, a lot of it has to do with the fact that people have these assumptions or these presumptions on how people are based off of things they've heard. You know, and again, going back to my whole example with Puerto Ricans.
Yeah.
For the longest time growing up, and I'll be completely honest and transparent.
Yeah.
I thought Puerto Ricans were lazy.
Okay.
That was my perception growing up, because it's like, you know, you'd go to places and you'd see you have a Mexican here, you have a Puerto Rican there. The Mexican's up at 6 o'clock in the morning looking for work to do. Maybe the Puerto Rican's not. But then you take a step back and look at... try to examine the history of Puerto Rico. How did we get here? Like, what is it? Why are things the way they are? I mean, you have to go back before the Spanish-American War to understand the whole history of Puerto Rico, to understand the history and the fact that Puerto Rico is a colony. I mean, you call it an unincorporated territory, whatever it is, but it's a colony. in the 21st century. Mm-hmm. You have people who have been tied to a country. They've been given citizenship, but they weren't given citizenship because we're nice or because, you know, we were like just so happy to do it. They were given citizenship because at the onset of World War One, we needed to send people to go fight. So you can't send somebody to go fight who isn't a citizen. So what do? You give everybody on the island citizenship. Now you have people who you can send off to war. That's one thing that a lot of people don't realize is that on Puerto Rico, on the island of Puerto Rico, you have so many active duty members. Like right. You have Army, Navy, like all of these people who are being sent to defend our country. So how are they not American?
Right.
If they're defending American interests, you know?
Right. And why is the main reason the blackout lasted so long because of lack of government funding, or was there something logistically that wasn't working? Do you know?
It's both. Mm-hmm. And there's another element that's not spoken about a lot. And it's the fact that you have you basically have a stalemate with Puerto Rico where there's people on the island who would like Puerto Rico to become a state. Mm-hmm. So that they would have more rights, more representation, the ability to vote. The funniest thing with Puerto Rico is like you, if you live on the island of Puerto Rico, you're born there, you're born a U.S. citizen, you're not able to vote for president. You're not able to vote for president.
Why?
Now, the minute, well, because of the fact that it's a commonwealth and the fact that they don't have representation the same way that a state does. So here's the thing.
Oh,
like I'm born in Puerto Rico, right? I can't vote for president. I hop on a plane and move anywhere in the United States, all of a sudden I can vote for president.
And your livelihood is directly affected by whomever is president.
100%. That is why in 2026, you have more Puerto Ricans living on the mainland than on the island. It's because everybody's realized, hey, there are limited opportunities for me here on the island. I'm not represented here on the island. I don't have a way to change the way that I'm represented. I can't vote for president. I can't do the things that people in the States can do. So why not just move to the States?
I did not know that they could not vote for president.
Yeah.
So there's no, basically it's because there's no one representing the Electoral College there.
So on the island of Puerto Rico, there is what's called a there's like a diplomatic representative.
Okay.
So that person is supposed to represent Puerto Rico, but they don't have a vote in Congress or in the Senate.
AJ.
Hey, these are all things that I learned when I went down to Puerto Rico.
I mean, you're blowing my mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like you need to be teaching a class on this because that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's actually crazy.
Yeah. That is why you have such a strong push from places like the PA Latino Convention, you know, from the Governor's Advisory Council on Latino Affairs, such a huge push with the Puerto Rican community specifically, the one that has moved to Pennsylvania, and educating them about civics. Is because, you know what? They don't have to worry about, you know, immigration status, like people who come from other countries, like becoming a citizen to then be able to vote. They're able to vote the moment they step into the Lehigh Valley, you know. And so I think that that's, if we're looking in terms of how do we fix things, that's kind of where you start, is where you have large blocks of Puerto Ricans. Maybe they can't affect the policies on the island, but they can affect the policies for the communities that they live in,
right?
Which in turn can affect the, you know, what was one of the most interesting things that happened during the trip that I took to Puerto Rico? We went and met with the governor of Puerto Rico.
Okay.
And we sat down with him and we told him where we were from. We said, hey, we're from Pennsylvania. There's this huge population of Puerto Ricans who live there. Can you believe that him and his team had no idea that there were this many Puerto Ricans in Pennsylvania?
I mean,
there's nearly a million Puerto Ricans in the state.
How do they know where people are fleeing to or going to or moving to? Like, how would they actually know?
So this is the funny thing. They use data just right. like everybody else. Mm-hmm. But when we sat down with them when we asked them, what year is the data from, the mm-hmm. data that you're using? And they told us that they're using data from 2008.
So things predates, have
changed. Predates Maria.
COVID.
Which it predates COVID. Predates all of the other natural disasters that have happened and everything else, you know.
Like the 2016 election.
100%.
Natural disaster.
Yeah. Yeah. So all of these things, you know, I think it's important for people to understand that Puerto Rico is not in the situation that it's in because they want to be.
Of course not.
They're in the situation that they are because systematically they have been kind of limited to not being able to vote for certain things, not being able to represent themselves. So that also impacts the financial district. It impacts the energy sector. It impacts all these
of
other
course.
Areas.
That makes so much sense to me.
You want to hear something crazy that's really going to blow your mind?
You're already blowing my mind, yes.
So this is going to blow your mind even more. Do you realize that Puerto Ricans get taxed twice on items that they buy in the supermarket?
And yet they cannot vote for who is making those decisions.
Correct.
Why are they getting taxed twice?
So here's the interesting thing. From when Puerto Rico was set up as a colony many, many years ago, there was a law that was passed. I have to go back and look at the exact name. But there was a law that was passed that states that Puerto Rican ports cannot accept ships that are not American ships.
Okay.
So you know all imports that come from Japan, that come from
China,
everywhere else. Those ships cannot dock in Puerto Rico. So here's what ends up happening. Those ships that have goods for Puerto Rico end up docking in places like Miami or New Orleans or New York or Baltimore, offloading all of the merchandise, putting it on an American ship to then send it down to Puerto Rico.
And so they have to pay double
taxes. They have to pay the double tax. Yeah.
God forbid a tariff gets thrown on that.
Right?
Who were you talking? I mean, like, when you go to Puerto Rico, did you take a history class? Like, who were you asking all these questions to?
Well, a lot of it was, you know, we met with the governor, obviously. But at the time, I met with my counterpart with the Puerto Rican Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah.
You know, trying to understand a little bit about that. We met with local mayors. We talked to everyday people. We went to some of the supermarkets. I mean, Puerto Rico is a really cool place if you're going there as a tourist to vacation.
Sure.
Because, yeah, you know, you got the U.S. dollar. It all makes sense.
Right.
You know, like the roads look the same. It's easy to get around. They're really cool places to hang out. But being there for 2 or 3 days is totally different than living there.
Of course.
Two different realities.
Right. So. You really got in the mix
yeah.
with the locals.
Yep.
It's kind of, I feel like it's a lot like when you meet someone's family and you're like, oh,
that's why you are the way you are.
And I feel like it's making so much sense. It's really just blowing my mind. I just assumed, and this is why it's so important to continue to learn
yeah.
because I had always thought that they were just considered a part of the United States, that they were voting, that they were all, you know. So,
but it's also important to understand that that's why many times you have people who come here and don't participate in mm-hmm. elections. It's because what they were used to on the island is like, well, I can't vote to affect things. So,
right.
you know, I think it's important to educate people on that.
Yeah.
But going back to your original question, you know, about, you know, folks who don't accept or don't understand, it's mm-hmm. like a lot of it is like, hey, try to put yourself in those shoes.
Right.
Try to understand what it's been like, you know, for somebody who grew up on the island, came here, had to, you know, really persevere to get to where they are. I think that most rational people would take a step back and really think like, wow, maybe I should learn more about this.
Right. I remember during COVID when everyone was talking about how obviously marginalized communities were dying at like 3 or 4 times the rate than predominantly white people. And yeah. I was thinking like, why is that? And I remember reading an article about how layered that was and yeah. how that came to be systematically. And it was wild. And I had white friends who were like, well, I can't, you know, go to my New Year's Eve party, or I can't do this, or I can't do that. And it was, I think you kind of touched on it, talking about how like Maria sort of just exposed some mm-hmm. of that. And I feel like COVID did that for people who were willing to pay attention to it.
Yeah.
And it's just wild to me. What do you think when you see like, or why do you think it happened when you would see a group like Latinos for Trump? How do you think that came to be?
That is a good question. I think that there are several factors along with that. First of all, you know, and this came, this was part of my education when I was with the Hispanic Chamber. I thought that everyone thought the way I did.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
I figured, you know, Hispanic, you know, we all think the same. And that's not necessarily the case. With many Hispanic communities, there are varying degrees of affiliation, of involvement. One of the things that I think was a huge factor with the 24 election was the perception of sanctity of the family, sanctity of marriage, protections for the baby, the abortion issues. And then there was also this rejection of issues that impacted like the trans community.
Mm.
You know, I heard those comments
from
people. It's like, you know, I can't get behind this person because she supports X, Y, or Z.
So like strong gender constructs within the Latino community.
Yeah, especially with the older generation, there is a very stern rejection of anything other than, hey, what we grew up with, what we knew. Some of that comes from the countries that they come from.
Mm-hmm.
One of the commonalities that many Hispanic countries have is that many folks are coming here from the States, like, you know, my parents' generation. They came here fleeing totalitarian regimes.
Okay.
You know, so dictatorships. You know, there was a harsh construct. And so anything outside of what that traditional definition is rejected.
Mm.
And so the thing is, that was the predominant block that was voting. It's the olders, like, you know, the youngers are just now starting to get into, you know, voting and representing themselves and their issues and everything. But I just think that as a whole, there was a really strong rejection. The other thing is that in many Spanish households, it's still male dominated, right? It's interesting that many times where I would go and, you know, like if you go into a Dominican household, Salvadorian household, women rule.
Yeah, right?
It's like the woman, she's got the family, you know, under control, and what she says, we do.
That's the perception I've always had.
Not like that in a Mexican family.
Okay.
In a Mexican family, it's like the woman submits to the man. You know, oftentimes I would see people trying to talk to a Mexican female about something. No, I can't talk to you about that. You need to talk to my husband. He's the one who makes all the decisions.
Mm.
So even who I vote for.
Wow.
You know, so right. You can see how
it would play into
100%.
Misogyny or right.
Yep.
And also you were talking about like people who were fleeing dictatorship.
Yeah.
I wish I could remember what it was, but I recently watched a documentary where they were talking about how something that starts out very anti-government can very quickly turn into dictatorship. And by quickly, I mean over, you know, some decades, but like it's not uncommon for that sort of like 180 to happen. And I wish I could remember the example because it was blowing my mind. But
I'll give you a short list. This is just from the 60s.
Okay, yeah.
Dominican Republic had a dictator. Cuba obviously had, you know, transitioned from one to another. El Salvador, Guatemala, Nicaragua, all of those countries in Central America. Those are all dictators. And the funny thing is, like, a lot of them were replaced by the U.S. government.
Perfect.
And I was like, gotta blow up in your face. Yeah. Gotta blow up in your face.
How's that going for you? Yeah.
It's interesting. But, you know, again, I think it's important to understand where people come from.
Yeah.
You know, and what their life experiences have been for you to then be able to relate a little bit better to them.
Yeah. And I think I could probably relate it a little bit to the LGBTQ community, because I would probably think the same way, where I would think, you know, if you identify as one of those letters, like, you must think the same way I do. And that's only one part of who they are. Like, I know there's so many other, you know, where you grew up and what your family system is like and where you went to school. Like, of course, I understand that. But whenever I would see those signs, like, or even seeing like Women for Trump, I was always like, why? Like, yeah. how does that work? So I appreciate you answering that question.
Yeah. Sometimes we don't really understand what people are going through, because we don't know where they've come from. We don't understand their journey, their path. But I think it's important that I don't have to necessarily agree to understand.
Right.
And that goes for anybody in your life. It's like, I don't have to agree with all of your decisions or agree with everything that you do or who you love or who you vote for me to understand.
Right.
And I think that if more of us leaned into that, again, we'd be drawing closer into community.
It's so hard to understand sometimes, though. Yeah.
It is.
Especially today. But I think it's a beautiful message.
Yeah.
I have one last question for you. For someone listening right now, what's like a tangible, not necessarily easy, but like an avenue that I could take to support my local Hispanic community? That would actually make a difference. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I think that part of it is what we've talked about is understanding people, have conversations with people, learn more about their walk of life. I've met so many amazing people, you know, and this is people who've been born in other countries, people who've been born here, people who've been allies to the Hispanic community. One of my favorite people in the whole world is Elizabeth Strong.
Yes, I mean, I was just thinking about her.
She is so amazing. She's down in the Dominican Republic right now.
Yes.
What was amazing to me about Elizabeth is that, you know, obviously her mother, I think, is Puerto Rican so she has Puerto Rican ancestry, though she was born here. But she is so connected to, like, the Hispanic community and you know, the cultures. And, like, Dominican Republic has become a second home for her. And, you know, we have this argument all the time because I'm Dominican and I haven't been there since 2004.
She's there,
and
like,
she's there, like, every weekend.
She's,
you know,
like,
basically.
Long weekend. Let me just hop on a
hop on a plane, yeah. Go down to Punta Cana. You know, that's piña coladas. Yeah, but we've had so many amazing conversations. We were actually at the White House together a couple of years ago. It was like, and we're just both standing there like, how did this happen? And it just so happened to be an invite from, there was a Dominican's Day on the Hill. So we got invited to represent,
yeah,
you know, the Lehigh Valley. But yeah, there's so many people from so many different walks of life, different experiences that I've gotten to know just by establishing those relationships. But I think hand in hand with that is support those businesses.
Mm-hmm.
I had an interesting experience last year with us selling our house and moving to another house. I decided, hey, just as an experiment, all this money that we're going to do in this transaction and doing and getting things and contractors and whatever, what if we just support Hispanic businesses?
Mm.
So I got a Hispanic realtor, I got a Hispanic mortgage originator, I got a Hispanic mover, all these things. And so these are things that I would normally do with somebody like U-Haul or whoever, but I'm putting that money into somebody's hands whose livelihood depends on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, going back to the bad buddy thing, we're so entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
One of the things that we can do to support the community is to give back to those businesses and support those businesses and be loyal. Go back around, and if you have a chance to go grab a lunch, support one of those businesses.
Yeah.
Why do you have to go to Panera? I mean, it's
like, get your coffee at Baristi.
Heck yeah.
So good.
Yes. So good. I mean, there's so many amazing spots in the Lehigh Valley, like, that we can support. I think that, you know, as board chair, one of my favorite activities, was going to like the ribbon cuttings, because not only do you see the people and their business, but you see the family behind it. And you realize that, hey, these people are doing this to support these people. Mm. You know, it's not just about them, but they also support the community. You know, a lot of them give back. A lot of them sponsor many of the great events that are going on. There's a lot of great events going on now, like Fiesta on Hamilton is coming.
Yeah.
That's going to be amazing. You know, there's stuff going on with our chamber. We have a golf tournament. We've got all these cool things where you can come out and support and, you know, learn more about the culture of the community and be a part of it, you know. And, you know, like we say, it's like we're all family. Somos familia.
I love that. And I feel better knowing that you're in my community.
Oh, so. Same.
Thank you. Same. Thank you for teaching me so much about Puerto Rico. Yeah. That was unexpected, but I loved it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I think that there's always something that we can learn from someone.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make us any less. It just actually helps us understand the world better.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for time.
All right.
Thank you for taking the time to be on V the People. And
gotta have you on our podcast at some point.
I would love to. Yeah. If you don't already follow AJ Suero on social media or listen to Somos Lehigh Valley.
We're getting ready to start our sixth season.
Hell yeah.
So we're going to have some cool guests announced soon. But you can learn more about the podcast on Instagram, Somos LV Podcast.
Perfect.
And I'm at AJ.Suero.
Perfect. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Bye.